This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me in the studio is, of course, Philip C. We're going to look at global markets. How did they do, Philip?
Not so good. In the US, the Dow and S&P Nasdaq were all down. Dow was down 0.8%, S&P negative 0.6%, Nasdaq was down 0.5%. Asia, quite mixed actually. The Nikkei continues its upward trend, up 0.7%. The Hang Seng was down 1.2%, Shanghai Composite down 1.4%. Singapore was up 0.2%, but back home, unfortunately, FBM KLCI was down 0.9%. I think there was quite a big decline across many counters there.
Yeah, I think fears over what they, you know, what is being debated in Parliament over a windfall tax. So we'll talk about that later on. But we have Jack Kuzi on the line with us, Director for Strategy at VFS Group, to give us his view on global markets. Jack, I have a question on Apple for you. Is the Apple iPhone 13, which had its debut yesterday, is that going to be lucky or unlucky for them?
You know what, I haven't had a chance to, good morning and happy Malaysia Day for everybody tomorrow and enjoy your public holiday. I haven't had a chance to look at the specs, okay? So you kind of hit me with this one from left park, but I'm going to say on the back of everything that Apple's done and all the other iPhones they've had, this is going to be lucky for them.
Jack, we all know your bias anyway. It's your favorite stock.
It's the greatest company on earth. I think that's your constant quote on the company.
No, I think it's going to be good. I mean, look, like I think I said this a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I say a lot, so I got to remember what I'm going to say. Apple is the greatest company at selling the same product over and over and over again, right? The iPhones have, you know, kind of been quite similar, a different camera, a little bit of an edge, new screen. I think it's going to be a big seller for them. I think you're going to see a lot of people try to upgrade, and I think it'll do well in the bottom line for numbers. And look, the greatest thing about Apple is they tend to have really good products, and the after support about Apple is one of the greatest things that you can do. Go to an Apple store, get it replaced, got a great ecosystem, and I think the services is something that we're also looking at as growth. So I haven't had a chance to look at it. It's been a busy morning for me, but I'm going to say it's going to be a winner.
Can we just take a bigger picture and look at markets in total, in totality? Because the month of September is usually when equity markets see really some sell-offs. Yeah. Is there an opportunity to buy on the dip?
Yeah, well, the market's conditioned to buy the dip, isn't it? And, you know, every time we've seen something like this, a 4 or 5 day sell-off in markets, we have seen buyers come in. And I think that will continue to stay true. I think you brought up a really good point. That September generally is, you know, a kind of a topsy-turvy time for market, but who cares about history? We're in the middle of, you know, of an opening of a pandemic. Nothing is really playing out like we think it's going to be. Look, it's hard to buy the dip when you're fully invested. I'll give you some insight. You know, we probably have 9 to 10% cash in our portfolios at the moment. So even if we wanted to buy the dip, you know, we don't have much to, I guess, to throw at it at this point in time. I think the market's conditioned to buy the dip. I think it's going to take a lot for us to remove that condition. So I do expect us to buy this market towards the second half of September. You know, you've got a little bit of unease about the Delta variant. CPI figures were a bit blown out last night, as you mentioned before I came on. You know, growth hasn't been what we expected. So there's some tenter hooks in the market, some profits being taken. And I think what we need to understand is markets just can't go up all the time. So any pullbacks like this that we're seeing now, I often think are healthy pullbacks, and will reinforce a rally towards the end of the year.
But Jack, where will you be deploying your money? I mean, if you had any, because you did say you're pretty, your liquidity is pretty tight at the moment. But if you did, yeah, where would you put your money?
Yeah, look, I continue to favour what we call work from home stocks, which I don't believe they're work from home stocks. One stock I was looking at in particular, if you want some specifics, was Zoom after the last earnings report. You know, did $1 billion in revenue for the first time. They did forecast growth was going to be slow, but I just really think this company's got a lot of legs in terms of what it's doing. That's one name that's really standing out to us at the moment. I still like cloud, still a big sector of mine. Zscaler is one that I'm looking for in particularly around there. So it's always centered around that tech. I still like the fin payment companies, PayPal in particular. So, you know, those still wheelhouses within tech is where I'd want to look, particularly if we continue to see a pullback of these markets or of these sectors in particular.
I mean, you talk about FinPay, but let's shift from US to China, because Alipay really is in the headlines quite a lot, because there are a lot of rumors that Beijing is looking to break it up. You know, why would they want to do this, and how will it change Ant's valuation if that happens?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I'm surprised they haven't done it earlier. They kind of forecasted they were going to look to do it when they scuttled the Alipay IPO. There are two segments within Alipay that investors have to look at, and that's Huobei and Xiaobei, and I'll probably pronounce those wrong. But they are micro-lending platforms within the Alipay network or the Ant Financial Network. And they have now become, on a combination, bigger than the wider Alipay credit, which you do, you know, when you pay for things at merchants. The concern from the Chinese and the Chinese authorities is micro-lending can be a very risky business, because you're lending to people who probably shouldn't have a loan, right? You know, so it's the bottom of the barrel type of lending, and you lend in multiple areas, and it happens on an enormous amount of frequency. These have become big sectors and big parts of the business. The concern by authorities is that when Alipay goes and lends 100 yuan in these micro-lending platforms, they're putting up 2 to 3 yuan of their own money. The rest is being put up by state-owned enterprises, ICBC, Agriculture Bank, maybe Hurong Bank, who knows, right? So their concern is the balance sheets of really of the state-owned enterprises, because they're putting up the big bulk of the loan. Now, they will amend for that or cater for that by making companies like Ant and even WePay put up 30%. But I think the big concern from the authorities is how much of the state-owned enterprise's balance sheets are in these riskier types of loans. So that's what the breakup looks like it's going to be. You're going to pull out Huobei and Xiaobei, put them on different platforms, and allow Alipay to operate as it is.
But Jack, how do you then value big tech in China?
Well, it hurts the valuation. There's no doubt about it, right? It definitely hurts the valuation of Alipay, and therefore it hurts the valuation of Alibaba, which owns 40% of Alibaba. Because the reason why it hurts the valuation is because aggregating data is, you know, leads to an uplift in your valuation in particular, and having the one app, because you know who you're lending to and you can cross collateralize that data to get better lending practices. So there's no doubt it hurts the valuation of Ant Financial. Now, what that's going to look like when it IPOs, I don't know. But if you take it in the context of Huarong Bank and Grande, then you kind of understand why the Chinese authorities are doing it. They're trying to secure their financial markets. They don't want their state-owned enterprises to end up in a situation where, you know, you have a Grande or you have a Huarong Bank in this situation. So it's not unexpected. The first headline you hear is, well, here you go. They're just hitting another one, and they're trying to stifle innovation. I think it's more of a long-term move to protect the capital markets infrastructure that they have. So I get why they're doing it. Probably not the greatest timing, but they don't seem to care about timing at the moment. It doesn't really matter to them, but that is why they're doing it. They're trying to protect their standing enterprises from having a situation that you're having right now with some of these, you know, wealth management companies that we're seeing.
And just building on that point on Evergrande, because the Chinese government has assembled a group of accounting and legal experts to examine the finances, do you think the bonds will default? And do you think this is too big to fail then for the Chinese government to intervene?
No, so it's interesting they brought in financial advisors. It's interesting there was a protest at the head offices yesterday. I don't think this is a solvency problem for Evergrande. I actually think this is a liquidity problem. I think it's got enough assets to survive. It's just the question is, it can it keep the creditors away during that period? I think it's too big to fail. I think you'll see an injection by the PBOC, and they will save it. And I think the bonds will continue. Huarong is a perfect example of that. It's a very different situation. But I when I look at this company, and yes, it's been a mess, and it's probably the worst time for it to happen, I don't think it's an asset problem. I think it's a liquidity problem, and you can solve it by an injection and then, you know, holding off the creditors and restructuring the debt. So I think it will survive, yes.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group, giving us his views on global markets. And it was an interesting conversation, especially on China, in terms of the breakup of Alipay and also the consequences of Evergrande's, bailout, if there it needs to boil down to that. But I have another question. I'm not sure that they won't, and I repeat, won't be a contagion effect on the financial markets in China.
Yes, I tend to agree with you that these are all very interconnected elements. You know, for a while, I always thought the tech crackdown and the Evergrande Huarong issues were kind of separate but distinct. But, you know, Jack, I think, very nicely showed the interconnection, and Alipay really was that nice thread. Very interesting point, though, that, you know, about a year ago, HNA was always in the limelight, you know, as someone too big to fail, as a risk
as
well.
And they ran the Hainan airline, and I do believe they also own a hotel group.
Exactly. So they overstretched themselves. But interestingly, in the past 2 years, they did secure strategic investors for some of these businesses. So perhaps, you know, the Chinese government will make some effort to find some way to get it done. Maybe it's not through the conventional approach of, you know, pumping in cash in other forms, but it could be other state actors and all that to help it make work.
Yeah, I suppose one way would be to get the SOEs involved. The second would be, of course, to do a massive asset sale, because all these Chinese companies in the last 10 years really went on an asset acquisition binge, whether it was domestically or internationally. So they do have things to sell. It's just a question of price as usual. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.